Sing with me.
Cradle me, carry me, gently together, together forever, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. Cradle me, carry me, gently together, together forever, oh God, oh God, oh God,
oh God. I invite you to close your eyes. Take a deep breath in and exhale with a sigh. Let's do that two more times. Deep breath in and exhale. And one more time. Breathe in and exhale. As you settle into stillness, I want you to imagine being held by the Divine Father. The strong and loving arms that support you, that cradle you, and protect you. And in the Divine's arms, you feel at peace. You feel at one with all creation. For you know you are held and loved with abundance. And as you rest in that place, that supported, comfortable place, you find your light begins to shine. Your inner light begins to glow so brightly that it radiates from your heart space. And that light connects with all human beings in a place of love and peace. And it is in our unity we find the oneness, our Christ consciousness that supports us and allows us to feel safe to be exactly who we were meant to be in this life. Divine Spirit, thank you for this beautiful gift of life. We are living, breathing embodiments of divine light. Here experiencing this earth in so many ways that teach us lessons, that help us to grow, and help us connect. Because we are here to find unity. Unity with ourself, unity with each other, and unity with all that is. Thank you for blessing us. Thank you for giving us grace and patience as we find our way, just as a father does. And so it is. Amen.
Cradle me, carry.
gently together, together forever, oh God, oh God, oh God. One more time. Cradle me, carry me, gently together, together forever, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God.
Well, good morning. And you know I'm George Conrad. Well, my talk today is called The Parent Problem and Our Church Experience. And I stand here today wanting you to know that I'm reading a very, very collaborative effort between myself and my lifelong partner, Viola. This wasn't my own at all. This was by and ours in spirit. You know, as Father's Day was dawning, we realized just how much my relationship with my parents affected my relationship with my church and my God and my fellow church members. And that's why I'm calling this the parent problem. And we hope that my sharing will inspire you to think about your own parental relationships and how those have affected your relationships with your church, heck, even with your employers and with your God. You know, my parents loved me, but they didn't know how to accept my individuating as I grew up. You know, when I make choices about careers or romantic adventures, one that's been going on for 44 plus years, they'd either shame me or they'd disown me, hoping that maybe they could persuade me to accept their way of thinking about the situation. And I got the message at that age that it wasn't very safe to be my authentic self around authority figures. Come on, how many of you felt that way? Come on, raise your hand. Yeah, almost all of us. So I entered adulthood with one goal in mind. I'm going to keep my dad, my mom, and my God at a safe distance. The parent problem. And then I became a parent. Man, Vi read studies. She read so many books. I learned so much through her studies. That church-going children find it easier to actually develop their own inner compass when peers are going to be providing them lots of different dangerous choices. And suddenly, Vi and I were church shopping. And when our butts hit these seats here at Unity back in 2001, and the Unity minister said, "Welcome. We accept and believe that there are many paths to God." Wow, I knew our fatiguing search was over. Man, I just knew ministers and Sunday school teachers. They would support us as we were telling our son that we would see our non-Christian friends in heaven. That's really important because that's not what he was hearing in other places. And what's the second reason that we hung our coats in this church? It's because of this. We didn't have to look at this every Sunday. I mean, I grew up Christian, And I still claim that title. And the founders of Unity claimed that title. They were Christians. But whenever nuns or clergy or any 12-step sponsors would tell me that I needed to give myself up to my higher power, man, I just wanted to shout, really? Look at that. I mean, where was Jesus' beloved father when that was happening? I was a kid. And his son was being hung on a cross and whipped with thorns. I realize now that my fearful distancing from God began the moment that I'd seen my first crucifix. The parent problem. Any of you ever feel that way? It's not a pretty picture. My wife's journey was different. From an early age, she dealt with bouts of near death and chronic pain. And that led her to hone her relationship with her divine power. But I didn't have any pain or trauma in my life. I was lucky. Or was I? I mean, I see now that my lack of, you know, curiosity of acknowledgement of the daily divine synchronicities that occur in life were part of why I didn't feel God's presence. I never opened the door to Him. In fact, I pretty much kept it shut. I found myself perched somewhere between agnosticism and atheism. You know, and I played the New Thought songs every Sunday on that piano for you. Sundays, after months, after years. You know, and I never had a real connection to the lyrics or the lessons that were being presented in church. Until my marriage hit the rocks. Hard! And I found myself suddenly sitting in a tiny, crappy little apartment in Post Falls. And I was lonely. And I was afraid. It brings tears because it was real. And I was here at this church when this was happening. I made the decision to make myself available to whatever God there is through daily study and meditation. And that's when I found Him. In a Native American sweat lodge. The dark, smoky, hot, and steamy tent was womb-like. And I suddenly remembered. I didn't start life as an embryo. No, first, I was a soul connected to something much bigger. And I remember in that sweat lodge, that my soul was jettisoned into that tiny little body in my mother's womb. God was with me, and suddenly I could feel God in the sweat lodge. That door was starting to be forced open. I understood then that God and I are and always will be inseparable. And I exited that sweat lodge knowing my human situation was the same, but my experiencing of it was different. It made me suddenly wonder, how did Jesus' recognition of His oneness with God affect His experience of crucifixion? You know, I remember Viola telling me that she described the floating above her body as she was twice dying. An enveloped and inexplicable peace and love, she felt no pain and no fear. And when we open the door to God, things don't necessarily feel the same way they look. In A Course in Miracles, Jesus says that He is frustrated by the fact that we focus more upon His traumatized death rather than His resurrection. That's where He wanted our attention. And what is resurrection anyway but coming back to life? Are we not resurrected every time we remember each other's own selves, the shining souls beneath these human bodies and stories? That's what Jesus did when he forgave his murderers before his last breath. Jesus felt his oneness to all. He passionately wanted to enlighten a physically and spiritually tortured world. And God was his loving partner and worked with him. And together they brought healing to the world that they both loved, and it brought them mutual joy. I like that word. Coming back 3 days after dying, an untraumatized, beaming Jesus showed his joy. Look at that. He was not smiling on that cross. A human can't. But he was when he came back resurrected. And he called to his disciples, "Don't you get it now? We are eternal. Nothing can really hurt us. We're forever supported, guided, and loved." God, isn't that great? It is, man. Jesus wasn't sacrificed by his heavenly parent that I felt when I was younger. That feeling of God being a cruel, demanding parent was my parent problem being projected onto spirit. And clearly, I'm not the only one. It seems humans can't decide whether to love or to fear God. We're hardship focused, man. We lose the supportive miracles that are always accompanying our human pain. And what about that pain? You know, when Vi and I look back on that separation of 9 months, we can see that life was actually happening for us and through us, not to us. Those months' work eventually led to the loving marriage we've always dreamed of. The kind of union our ancestors could never manage during those war-traumatized, patriarchal, rampant, misogynistic eras that they grew up in. Native American friends are sure that Vi and I have healed not just ourselves when we reshaped our marriage, but we're healing generations forward, and we are healing generations back. And I really believe that too. On his deathbed, my father admitted he had learned some valuable lessons from me. He literally said, "Georgie, you did it right. But there's always a but." But he wrote me out of his will. I did everything I thought he would love, what he wanted. I did. No more Georgie in the will. Was I wounded? You bet I was. The parent problem. Codependence Anonymous helps me understand how these family wounds shaped me. But A Course in Miracles says that love is the only thing we're going to remember when these bodies die. So I'm not waiting till I die. Today I focus on my love for my parents and the love that they managed to give me despite their extremely tough childhoods. I love them for being better parents than the parents that they had. And I'm assuming that my grandparents were better parents than their parents. They did better. And now it's my turn. I am claiming my wholeness every time I identify another dysfunctional pattern and change it. I am part of an upward spiraling evolution of mankind. This is what I am celebrating today on Father's Day. Codependence Anonymous teaches that we don't have to be ashamed of our wounding, but we need to be just responsible for our healing and clear about how our adaptive behaviors that we developed affect our relationships with our families, with our employers, and with our churches and God. And to be clear how we can handle that feeling of being not good enough. Anyone ever felt that way? Oh, yeah. Until we get the information and the support that we need for healing, humans are going to look for addictions to numb that pain and confusion. And Vi and I eventually settled on the most admired, held up in society's addiction, workaholics. You know, it's really, really, really admired and supported until it isn't. Fun gets squeezed out. Exhaustion brings emotional outbursts and illnesses and accidents and withdrawal. Think about it. I withdrew from this church. We push away the love and the help that we need at the very time we need it. Humans, jeez, we gotta love us. You know? As workaholics, my wife and I eventually joined that 20% of congregations that repeatedly fill volunteer positions. Studies show it's the same for any denomination. 80% of congregants come to church non-participatory, just wanting to be taken care of. They just want to get away from whatever is hitting them. And traditional clergy and traditional churches, they use fear of eternal consequences to move that passive 80% into tithing. In New Thought churches, we don't guilt and we don't push. We wait. And we wait. Meanwhile, our financial holes are getting deeper and deeper. But we have something in common, you know, with those traditional churches. Because of every one of those congregations, 20%ers eventually burn out. With the numbers of doers being so small, how can leadership not lean hard into those 20%ers who are often the very people who are struggling with the addictions of over-pleasing, of doing all the work, of trying to fill every gap that there is? Have you noticed that even in church, where we study spiritual principles and compassions, exhausted people start turning on each other, the board or the minister? Did you hear that? I was only actively involved in this church hardcore for about 18, 19 years, and I saw this place go through a revolving door of ministers. Oh, it's a great church. What I've noticed is that this vibe of fatigue and blame that ripples through many churches, most active 20% every couple of years, causes many doers and non-doers to quietly walk away. Now, there is a way to stop this cycle. In her book, Revolutionary Agreements, Marion Head urges organizations to value its people more than it values its product. She urges us to let things go undone if there's not enough money, or not enough enthusiastic energy or interest to take care of them. Sometimes gaps just have to sit there in the open until it starts to call forth the new energy and ideas that will come. And this means something that's going to hit a lot of you, and it hit me. Churches need to become healthier. Congregants must stop volunteering for everything, especially if they don't want to do it. Church leadership must stop being afraid that they're going to lose congregants or newcomers if they admit that the church isn't financially or energetically ready to really support something at any given time. And when I entered this church years ago, excuse me, that was in 2001, like I said, its financial needs were closeted. And I glanced about. Look at this place. God, things look great. Things were running smoothly. Man, I truly thought that there were national funds or great benefactors that were supporting this church. Yeah, there wasn't. There wasn't. Unaware the church was operating in the red, I treated the offertory basket like I would treat the coffee collection at a 12-step meeting. You know, sometimes I just mentally blessed the basket as it passed by because that's what I'd seen a lot of other people do. You know, and then finally, one Sunday, our minister, Marilyn Muehlbach, who founded this church, she admitted that it was in financial dire straits. And she used that sermon to shyly ask all of us if we would, can we give 10% of our income as tithes to try to help the situation? Just like what the Bible suggests. Her stories demonstrated how giving at this level somehow unlocks a flow, a new flow of abundance, both for the giver and the receiver. We've heard those. I know you've heard those talks. Well, you know what? I felt more put off than inspired. I eventually got over it, and I started writing my checks out of gratitude for this church, grateful for this church. But for a while, I quietly and defensively fumed. Don't tell me how much I got to give to a church. Don't tell me I need to tithe like the Bible said. You're making me feel like I'm failing. I was projecting my parents onto the church, onto that very sweet woman who was merely doing her job for the passion that she had for this place. The parent problem. God bless us. I fear whether we're hunkered down healing or feeling teenage rebellious, our empathic ministers can feel our back off vibes. And I fear that they unconsciously and codependently protect us from the harsh money realities that wake them up 3 a.m. Working with Northwest Youth Camps, and we did a lot of years. Vi and I, and we've done it, we've been doing stuff in the south of the United States. Vi and I see that New Thought churches across the country are draining their bank accounts and savings accounts, and they're selling assets. And now we're hearing that nationwide a surprising number of ministers are just quitting. I'm seeing heads nodding up and down from one of your prospective ministers. This is not lies. This ain't BS. Did you know that New Thought ministers are taught that if tithes aren't flowing, the minister has failed to properly address parishioners' prosperity consciousness? Now, how's that for setting up a codependent train wreck? Jeez. When financial reports are equated with a minister's report card, time-giving, savings account-protecting budget measures are bound to get slowed down by guilt or shame, secrecy. I know that. I was on a board at this church, and I talked to a lot of people who are on boards of other New Thought churches. It's the same. I've watched more than a couple of stressed minister and board members do what I do when I feel cornered. I double down, and I cling to what's familiar, even if it isn't working. Overwhelmed, I shut down new ideas. Like, we already tried that, or that ain't going to work around here. And our poor ministers, we expect them to be three ministers in one. We want a minister who has an inspired Sunday service to present to us. We want a gentle, loving pastoral minister to be with us when we're in our hospital rooms. And we want a minister who's adept at budgeting and marketing and fundraising and operating an office. Yeah, I'm seeing people who've been here a long, high time. I'm seeing heads going up and down, man. You know? We don't want just a person. We want a Wonder Woman or a Superman. They don't exist. Those are cartoon characters. It's the parent problem. We're looking to be taken care of by our parents. Priests in other more traditional churches have a much more defined role. Excuse me. They're the spiritual shepherds of their flock, working from, a lot of them, pre-printed scripts that come in every Sunday from the diocese. Temporal matters of the business is always handled by the diocese and the Board of Trustees. In Catholic and Episcopal churches, in which Vi and I grew up, board seats were filled by invitation. Board members were picked for their qualifications, not just looking for a body. Fellow congregants tipped the board members and their priests and the people that are working at their churches for serving them. I mean, gifts were given to them of free food or maybe some liquor or cash or some, you know, professional services or anything like that. I mean, we saw that when we were growing up in those churches. And I wonder why we don't honor those who serve us in the same way. Well, our New Thought movement traditionally has trouble filling those board seats, and perhaps it's due to that rebel energy that we talked about earlier, what I talked about earlier, and what maybe brought us to these churches in the first place. Well, you know, by the time I discovered New Thought, I felt done. I'm not going to garner authority figures anymore, their favor anymore. Unity taught me that I don't need an intermediary to talk to my God. Neither do I need brownie points with the leaders. Man, I relish my self-sufficiency, don't you? I mean, it's a good thing. Until it isn't. Somehow, while celebrating our independence, our budgets are showing that we need to hone awareness, grace, and acceptance of our interdependence. So today, in the name of greater community health, I'm going to ask you to try something new. And it's going to happen during the offertory ritual that comes next. Now, Vi asked Spirit, when she was drafting this thing at the beginning, how it could help augment this entire presentation. And this is what came to her in her meditation. So, please kiss your beautiful inner teenager on the head and ask them to stay open instead of balking. Okay? Are you ready? Okay, because here we go. Let's all drop concrete cash, every one of us, into the basket as it passes today. Even if it's only pocket change. Even if, you know, later on you're going to make an online payment or write a check like I'm going to. It's a symbolic gesture of your gratitude. Matter of fact, yeah, a little bit of money here. That's going to be my tip. To those who serve us on top of the check that I'll send in. Because I'm understanding that through Vi's Spirit-led vision, there's beauty in visually honoring a church's financial needs and our interdependence as humans. I mean, think about it. On my behalf, some members of the church have turned on the lights this morning and made sure the air conditioning was set up. They bought paper towels and coffee and cups and napkins and toilet paper. They paid a beautiful soul to clean those toilets and vacuum this carpeting. They paid the water bill so we could have grass out there and flush our toilets. They bought insurance. They found an affordable accountant to keep this church straight with the IRS. Negotiated fees for musicians, the church secretary, and every speaker that's been here this past several months. They paid a music director to pick songs, rehearse with musicians and the singers, and even to create a schedule for the order of service. paid a youth ed director to organize volunteers and materials, organized spiritual practitioners to hold a high watch and then sit with us and pray with us individually after church's services ended. Made sure I received an e-blast about what today's topic was going to be and also what the activities of the church are. They have arranged for volunteers to fold those programs and put in those inserts and greet us and smile at us at the door when we arrived. And they paid soundboard and video technicians so that this service can be heard as equally way in the back as well as up in the front. And those who are wherever in the world who are watching this on online streamers. And I know that I have failed to mention other contributors. But clearly it takes a great deal of effort and money to be able to offer healing service and this healing space. And this is a very healing space. I'm understanding that dropping cash in the offertory is saying, I see you, contributors. And I appreciate you and this church. You know what? I want to add some music. It's not the kind you're thinking about. Our teachers and churches teach us that gratitude is the cornerstone of abundance. Can you imagine the lovely sound that's going to ripple like a symphony through the sanctuary if we each say aloud, thank you, as we pop some money into the basket? It would sound like a really, truly appreciative people. And they appreciate money here too. How would that be for actively and enthusiastically engaging the law of attraction? Now, I realize you might be uncomfortable if you only pack credit cards today, but I got a solution. You know, when that basket is coming by and the person to the right or left of you sees that your hands are empty, let them give you a bill or some coins to put in and join this symphony with us. That's where your hero's role can come in. And accept that and say thank you to them. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to smile back at you. Whoa, a little different, pretty weird. But let's admit that whatever we've been doing nationwide isn't working for New Thought churches. It isn't. I'm almost tired of driving around seeing big box churches that have, they're going to come back with that fire and brimstone and guilt you into it. They're building and building and building and get bigger and bigger and bigger. Why isn't our church? Why aren't New Thought churches? So let's today playfully have fun and try something new. Let's visibly and audibly embrace and celebrate our human interdependence. Let's make it okay to admit we need each other and that we love each other. We need money, and money is our friend. It's okay, no matter what some of our parents may have taught us, it's okay to talk about money and recognize our need for it. We have bills. And I say this not for this church, but for every New Thought church I've ever been in. And it's been a lot of them over these past years, decades. Can I get an amen? Come on. Amen, man. And if money is tight right now at your house, please don't wait for better days to contribute. You know, remember today's offering. And just throw a couple coins in, whatever you can, spare change, nothing big. Just show your actions. And that shows the world and your God that you know this is a precious place that has ongoing bills. I'm willing to be part of that solution to any extent I can. I'm willing to let money flow to and through me. And I believe church's money problems will disappear when each of us finds even tiny ways to more actively own the following fact. We are the benevolent parents needing to cradle these lovely, nurturing businesses called New Thought Churches. The bills don't go away just because you're a church. You might get a tax break. That's it. Viola and I have prayed you'll remember this talk and find it inspiring. And I know we're inviting you to come out of your comfort zone. You know, in the youth camps, they used to say you're in your comfort zone. Job is at the camp is to put you into your challenge zone. We'll keep you away from the dangerous zones. But you want to grow. You want to feel God. You want to feel the interdependence that we all have. So, we hope you'll find this fun. I'm going to. May our combined latte, cigarette, and snack money that we use throughout the week, it's amazing how much of that stuff goes through our fingers, may it multiply like the fish and loaves of the Bible. By working together and making the offering bags jingle, as well as the symphony of the thank yous, we're all saying to the Unity Center for Spiritual Growth, Happy Father's Day. Thank you for holding us like a loving parent and cradling us. We got your back. We can do this. It's beautiful, isn't it? Interdependence. Namaste. And I would really love for those who don't know Viola, please stand so they can see who we are. So we are going to do our offering. So start digging. See what you got, man. You got any change? I mean, we've been advertising to check out that drawer of coins you got sitting in your car. And I want to say thank you. Make sure to say thank you.
There's a little girl with pretty curls. She's about 5 years old. She is waiting at the gate for her dad to come home. When he pulls round the corner in his shiny white car, she feels the magic light up in her heart. And he picks her up and he holds her, says he's missed her and he's glad that she's here. As his child lays her head on his shoulder, she whispers these words in his ear. Daddy, I know exactly what love is. Love is real simple and true. Love is this feeling my heart gets when I'm being held close by you. Now she is 20 and there's plenty of love everywhere. She's getting married, so her family and her friends are all there. They're gathered this morning to stand by her side as she waves goodbye to this time in her life. Each take a moment to hold her, to tell her what she means to them. In a world that just seemed to get colder, she's been blessed with warm family and friends. She says, I know exactly what love is. Love is real simple and true. Love is this feeling my heart gets when I'm being held close by you. Now they are older, no one told her that it got crazy like this. They're going to night school, working jobs too, and they're raising three kids. The youngest one is crying with a bruise on her knee. She needs attention, she needs sympathy. She picks her up and she holds her. That old magic lights up in her heart. As the child lays her head on her shoulder, she knows exactly why they're working so hard. Little girl, I know exactly what love is. Love is real simple and true. Love is this feeling my heart gets when I'm being held close by you. Now they are 60 and their history spans 40 odd years. They buried their parents, now their grandkids are here. There's something about the way they look in each other's eyes. Speak softly about the meaning of life. And when he pulls up, and when he puts his arm out to hold her, it feels so familiar and warm. She thinks love's an expanding endeavor to your last breath from the moment you're born. She says, I know exactly what love is. Love is real simple and true. Love is this feeling my heart gets when I'm being held close by you. Now she is 80 and she hates being in this nursing home. Her man's been gone now for so long and she feels so alone. She closes her eyes as she begins to pray that a little comfort might just come her way. And God lifts her up and he holds her, and she remembers this feeling she had. She's not a woman whose life is nearly over. She's a little girl being exactly what love is. Love is real simple and true. Love is this feeling my heart gets when I'm being held close by you. Help me out now. God, I know exactly what love is. Love is real simple and true. Love is this feeling my heart gets when I'm being held close by you.